You are listening to Radio Albion.
Hello everyone, welcome to another edition of the Orthodox Nationalist. This is Matthew Raphael Johnson. It is the 8th of April, 2020. I ask my friends to visit my website at rushjournal.org, and from there, to please donate to my research. Because these days, as you well know, are getting more and more difficult as time goes on. And as I've said many times, this is a full-time job, and the things I do can't be done anywhere else. And I'm noticing more and more the group of people out there that take my stuff, plagiarize my stuff, and pass it off as their own. And because no one's making money off it, I'm not going to say who they are, but I think not many of my friends know who I'm talking about. But to be the original is difficult, and it's a lot of work. And so supporting me, God knows how many other people you're supporting who take some of this material. And so please, and for those who have donated, I thank you very much. It is a struggle, especially now. I have to talk about the virus, not because I want to. I hate doing things because everyone else is doing them. That's repulsive. But since nothing else is being spoken of at all anywhere, I don't have a choice. Last week, I spoke very, very briefly about Alexander Dugin and Plato. Now that's maybe 1%, 2% of what he's had to say on the topic. Reading Dugin can be frustrating because he repeats himself so often. You know, these books say a lot of the same things over and over in different ways, which is okay, since we all have themes and topics that we go over time and time again, depending on circumstances. I certainly do that. But recently, Dugin's been talking about the virus in a very strange way. And as of now, I want to register my disagreement with him. Although the fundamentals of what he's talking about are certainly true. I am a strong supporter of his, a Eurasianist, always have been. But he is taking this as almost an apocalyptic sign. He sees this as pretty much the end of civilization. Or at the very least, the end of so-called global civilization. He says, "The outbreak of the coronavirus epidemic has been a decisive moment in the destruction of the unipolar world and the collapse of globalization." Now, I think he's a little optimistic. He does realize that the capitalist world has been in damage control mode since 2008 at the earliest. At the latest. I mean, they've been in damage control mode probably since the Great Depression. And of course, the $1 trillion bailout of the irresponsible oligarchs need to be justified. And as my listeners know, that's the real reason for this, not so much the virus itself, but for this overcompensation. And this obsession is now $several trillion that have been already given to the banks. And God knows the inflationary spiral is going to come out of this. But that's the esoteric aspect of the virus reaction. Here's what Dugin says in more detail. He says, "The crisis of unipolarity," and what he means by that specifically is the rule of liberal capitalism from Washington. "The crisis of unipolarity and the slippage of globalization has been noticeable since the very beginning of the 2000s. 9/11 catastrophe, sharp growth of China's economy, the return to global politics of Putin's Russia, as an increasingly sovereign entity, a sharp activation of the Islamic factor, growing crisis of migrants, and the rise of populism in Europe and the US that resulted in the election of Trump, and many other parallel phenomena have made it clear that the world formed in the 90s, around the dominance of the West, the US and global capitalism, has entered a crisis phase. Now, the problem I have with Dugin is that this is why the virus was needed, not what it's causing. Everything that Dugin says has been going on for a long time. He wants to say that the virus is pushing it over the edge, and that, I suppose, may be, but the overreaction has a partisan foundation. Those to the left are promoting it far more than others. And Dugin is convinced that the multipolar world is beginning to develop as the virus exposes the weak spots of the globalized regime. Now, that's certainly true. But again, you didn't need the virus for that. This was happening long before. In my opinion, as of now, the virus is a way to forestall both the collapse of the system and the anger of the population, to the extent they could even express it, now being forced to bail out the bankers yet again. The numbers aren't adding up the way that the regime thought they would as far as deaths from the virus are concerned, but it doesn't matter. The virus isn't the issue, it's the reaction to it. But Dugin is certainly correct to point out the weakness of the order, of the globalized order. But those points were giving way no matter what. And he says even more extremely, he says this, he says, the coronavirus has buried all the major myths of globalization, and he lists them. The effectiveness of open borders and the interdependence of the world's countries. The ability of national institutions to cope with extraordinary situations. The sustainability of global financial systems and the world economy as a whole when faced with challenges. The uselessness of the centralized state, socialist regimes, and disciplinary methods in solving acute problems, and the superiority of liberal strategies over them. And finally, the total triumph of liberalism as a panacea for all problem situations. Now, the second to the last one, the uselessness of the centralized state, I think the problem there is translation. He's referring to the problem with liberal democratic states. Liberal democracies say that various forms of socialism and centralization can't do anything, and therefore liberalism should be tried. In other words, the public sector shouldn't really be involved in this unless it's at the behest of capital. So it's an odd way to put it, but he's talking about these are the basic pillars that now are being cut from under the system. Now, he may be correct, but again, where I think he's wrong is that the regime can blame the virus for these being cut out, not their own system, not globalization as such. Now, Trump's re-election may well be ensured by this same phenomenon, that he could blame the virus for any economic problems, not to mention handing out money, which, you know, for the pittance we're going to be getting compared to the trillions the bankers have already gotten is an insult. It's our money anyway. But from what I'm seeing, this is a crisis of short duration that forces the closure of borders is not an ideological blow to liberalism, any more so than the takeover of the entire U.S. economy by the federal government in 1942 was a blow to liberalism. It was not. Everything went back to normal. Governments can blame all of these problems on the unforeseen event of the virus, and they could justify all kinds of new powers that we may or may not ever see disappear again. And worse than all that, we'll talk about this here in a minute, is that they can blame China for this, and it's already happening, and threaten them with war, killing two birds with one stone. The positive elements that it's evoked a huge amount of cynicism to a public that really is aware of the massive bailout, is aware of the real purpose here, and is questioning the numbers. And don't forget, so few have been tested that the death rate is far lower than what we're seeing, because those tested are a very small number. When you, if you include larger numbers of people, the death rate will go way down. The sample size is very small, and that's a problem. Then he says, the post-virus world will see a rise of the regional order, which is essentially multipolarity, which is something I think most of us accept. But that depends on how long the crisis is going to last. If this were obviously the case, the regime wouldn't be going through all this. He even says, that at the same time, the universal model of liberal capitalism will likely collapse. This model currently serves as a common denominator of the whole structure of unipolarity. Now, that's true, and that's wonderful, but the virus is not going to be able to do that, especially if it's a relatively short short duration. And there's a reason why it's the super wealthy who are getting on TV saying that this is over. Dugin is really the only one from the other side that's saying this, but he's saying this at their expense. The virus itself is apolitical. And it should be noted that non-cosmopolitan states, like most of Russia and Belarus, are hardly affected. Belarus has taken no measures against the virus without any substantial negative effects. So the virus isn't the issue, it's the bizarre reaction to it. And what he says, and this is, he gets more curious, he says, whatever methods end the problem, whatever that might be, will be the germ of the future society, which is hardly reassuring. This is an overstretch of powers to an extreme degree, likely illegal, constitutionally speaking, in the face of this outbreak. Now, certainly are known to more people than before. But most people, as you may have seen, the polls suggest that if you trust polls, that this is legitimate. When he's talking about closing borders and resistance, he says this. He says, temporary alienation dictated by the direct threat of contagion from another country, another region, the severance of economic ties and the necessary alienation from a single financial system will force states in the epidemic to look for self-reliance because the priority will be food security, minimum autonomy, and economic autarky to meet vital needs of the population on the other side of any economic dogma, which before the virus was considered the only possibility. Even where liberalism and capitalism are preserved, it will be placed the national framework in the spirit of mercantilist theories, insisting on maintaining a monopoly in foreign trade in the hands of the state. Those who are less connected, the liberal tradition may well move in the inventories of the most optimal organization of big space, other directions, taking into account civilizational and cultural peculiarities. And he's talking about, of course, regionalism as a framework for nationalism. In other words, as in the face of crisis, priorities are going to change. A crisis, even one like this, forces people to rethink priorities. But this also depends on how long this is going to last. And it also begs the question as to why liberals are promoting this overreaction to such a great extent. Not to mention the fact that if liberalism were to be discredited from here, I don't see how that can be, what's it going to lead to? That doesn't necessarily mean our victory. And he's talking about also, he believes that China will be a major beneficiary here, because he accuses China in the past of trying to take over globalism for themselves rather than challenge it. Those two things are not exactly mutually exclusive. But the One Belt, One Road project isn't, you know, their version of globalization. It's a rejection of globalization, but because of the closures that the virus will cause, except the Silk Road isn't based on closures. It is based on regional movement of products. This doesn't really follow what he's saying. But this is that as far as China's concerned, that's long been the agenda anyway. The virus won't affect this. He even goes on to say that China's conflict in the Pacific with the U.S. will become more acute. Now, that's probably legitimate. But that can't occur really until the crisis is over, especially if it's over soon and, you know, the numbers aren't very big and et cetera. They're going to need someone to blame, and China's going to be very convenient there. Johnson's law fits perfectly here. The multipolar world is critical to everything Alexander Dugin believes. And Russia is always at the absolute center. Because Russia's power, will increase to the extent that borders close. That's been its agenda for a long time. You know, Russia will increase to the extent that the liberal world decreases. And geopolitical fragmentation is going to be the norm. Now, so far, Moody's Investment Research Service, the rating agency, says that 30% of the economy of California is gone. Now, I don't know where it went, because it doesn't disappear, it just changes hands. And if anything, Russia's comparative safety against the virus will boost popularity and give comfort to nationalists. But that's a separate issue, and how decisive it's going to be is a separate issue. And Russia's going to have to, you know, have an ideology that's very well expressed, a strong, coherent program as it begins to reassert itself in places like Central Asia and relative to China. But Russia's been barely affected by the virus. Dugin says basically the coronavirus, and this is a quote, the coronavirus epidemic represents the end of globalization. So what he's saying is the open society, those societies based on this kind of open liberalism, is going to be forced to close and therefore is going to reflect and reassess its connection to the globalist regime. And of course, the regime doesn't want this, so why is it promoting it is a separate issue. Dugin is absolutely convinced that this is it. This is going to be, you know, tens of millions of people. And he says pretty much that anyone who's perceived as wanting to tear down borders is going to be an enemy of humanity, because that just means letting the disease in. And I'm surprised at the naivete here. I mean, he may be thinking in terms of the subconscious, that people love the notion of being closed now, closed being the same thing as safe. But of course, all of this matters only to the extent that the press reports it. The press will not report anything like this. But the notion of a closed society being a positive one as a positive thing coming out of this is, again, it depends on the press. It depends on the length of time. But he may be talking about just the basic subconscious realignment. That fear begins to seep in and becomes a day-to-day part of everyone's life. The fact that China is seen as the origin of this has no relation to any concept of open borders. Because China will be blamed for this and is being blamed for this. Not to mention the fact that Americans are incredibly forgetful. He actually uses the phrase, Soros should be lynched, that lynching idea is going to become very common because people who believe in open borders are those bringing in the virus. But very few are blaming open borders for the spread of the virus, for the spread of the outbreak. And he says that liberalism has made it easier to spread the virus in all senses. So the main sense, though, is that borders are now more important with virus at the gates. But it's not at the gates, it's internal. Liberalism itself is a virus. There's no doubt about that. But the population, especially in the West, will not connect an abstract ideology to the spread of the virus. It's not in their capacity. Now, what he may be thinking of, in the 1990s in Russia and Eastern Europe, where most of the economy was liquidated and given into the bank accounts of the oligarchs, leading to mass poverty of extreme levels. From there on, the population associates, you know, liberal capitalism with utter poverty, utter destruction, and the rule of this tiny Jewish oligarchy. Now, he's thinking that that kind of realignment is going to happen here. And I think he's wrong about that. And I think he's jumping the gun here. But I want him to be right, of course. But I also don't want the large numbers that he's talking about. He says a little more time is going to pass here. He just wrote this a few days ago. And liberals will be equated with lepers, infectious maniacs who call to dance and have fun in the midst of the plague. Which is, you know, overly cheerful. The liberals are the ones who are over-exaggerating all of this. They seem to think that they're benefiting from it. Now, it's possible that open borders and virus will be synonymous in the public mind, but the elite doesn't think this. It's too abstract of an association. Russians may have been, were educated very differently. It implies a rationality among Americans and memory that the West simply doesn't have. Americans certainly don't have. And the press will forbid this kind of thinking. Because even if it turns out that the U.S. is the author of this, I don't think it's artificial. But even if it is, and it's from the U.S., the press simply won't cover it. Nothing matters unless the press covers it, at least for now. Now, he is right about the realignment of priorities. I said many times when the TV show The Walking Dead came out, one of the reasons I loved it so much is that all of the institutions of civilization had collapsed entirely. There was nothing left, just their own memories. That meant they had to organize themselves and begin thinking and acting in ways they would never have done otherwise. The old liberal virtues were still hanging around, but they were just prejudices. As time goes on, it's becoming more and more ingrained. Now, in this TV show, I haven't been really keeping up with it. In the TV show, they're not going to allow that to happen. But that's what would happen. The notion of regionalization, the notion of the extended family, hanging together for the sake of survival, that would take over, and you would have a completely different, very non-liberal approach to the world with that kind of collapse. But I'm not seeing that kind of collapse happening. No one is. Remember, they were talking about hundreds of thousands of deaths in America. That's nowhere near the case. He says, in the battle against the epidemic, neither China's wealth, nor the European social system, nor the absence of a social system in the U.S. will save them. Even the Iranian spiritual and vertical regime is not going to help them. Now, when this is over, the result will be that citizens will see borders as a problem or a solution. It's not clear. And the world's leaders are certainly not helpless here. The comparative treatment of Russia, Belarus, Kazakhstan, Vietnam, even North Korea and Iran are extremely different. Really only one of those countries, Iran, has been hard hit. And when this first happened, I was very suspicious about a bioweapon only because it seemed to have hit the Iranians almost alone. Especially now, the worst part of this is the massive injection of cash into Wall Street leading to inflation. Now, what Dugin is trying to say here, he says, I'm beginning to understand why in some societies the plague gods were revered and worshipped. The coming of the plague allows for the complete renewal of societies. The epidemic has no logic and spares neither the noble or the rich, nor the powerful or the poor. It destroys indiscriminately and brings people back to the simple fact of being. The plague gods are the fairest of all. Now, when the Syrian god, Rishab, adopted in Egypt, which is actually the root of Raphael, having to do with healing, you do have gods that are connected to the plague and are manifestations of that. And so you have plague gods in almost every society. They're usually not very popular or very important ones. In Greece, it's Apollo, but he's a healer as well as a destroyer in this sense. The plague is seen as something generally rational, connecting it to Apollo, in that it is fair and that it is a cleansing thing. I still don't think that's going to happen here. So Dugin's comment implies that the deaths are going to be in the millions, which is probably unlikely, so far anyway. Again, the liberals are supporting this extreme reaction. They don't agree with Dugin here. They don't see that their overreaction is anything but positive for them. For Dugin to say that the epidemic represents the end of globalization, and that the institutions that should have stopped it have failed, therefore mean that closed borders, nationalism, and a return to religion is going to happen, is a stretch. It's a stretch. It all depends on how long it lasts and how the press deals with it. What he's saying is a long way from doing what the Russians did after the 1990s. And they were right to do it. In 2014, when the so-called riots took place against the vaguely pro-Russian Ukrainian government, I laughed because no one is going to defend the EU in Ukraine unless they're making money from it. And no one's going to support free trade or anything like that that the regime was promoting over there. The bankers were promoting over there. That is a very unpopular position. Even with tons of CIA money in Russia, you know, the coalition of westernized capitalist parties get maybe 4%. And that's the reason for it, is that people, you know, for the foreseeable future associate liberalism and that kind of Western capitalism with destruction, with disease, with a complete breakdown of society. He's saying this is going to happen again relative to this virus, and they're going to blame open borders for this and therefore blame the liberals. Now remember, this is the 8th of April. New hospitalizations for the coronavirus in New York have dropped by 75%. The governor of California has announced they're going to be giving back the ventilators they demanded from the federal government, largely because they're not necessary anymore. And Cuomo certainly not going to be using them all, given the fairly low hospitalization numbers. And by now, by the way, it's supposed to be at least 10 times this amount that they were predicting just a few weeks ago. Remember, it was actually just a week or two ago that the 90% of the state's going to have the virus by now or very, very shortly from now. But the AP says that the governor, Newsom of California, announced Monday the state will loan 500 ventilators to the national stockpile for use by New York and other states experiencing a crunch of coronavirus-related hospitalizations. California chose to loan this equipment because it's not as dire a situation as New York, now the epicenter of the crisis. And they've spoken for the governor. The modeling shows California will hit its peak sometime in May. Now, as this is being admitted, I mean, they're you know, essentially saying it's not a big deal. They have no idea when the peak is going to be, if it hasn't happened already. And this is all being said as the numbers are far lower than what they predicted. The New York governor has doubled the fines for those caught violating the stay-at-home order. I really doubt that states would be giving away valuable medical equipment, expensive medical equipment now, if they really thought there's going to be a severe crisis and the peak hasn't come yet. The New York Times did a piece about a month ago. The New York Times did a piece where they predicted that there'll be no ventilators by now, and yet tens of thousands of hospital personnel are being laid off, including right here in my town. They're trying to claim that this is because elective procedures are being rescheduled. That doesn't make any sense, because anyone with medical training wouldn't be laid off if the peak hasn't come yet. It's going to be all hands on deck. If this were a real crisis, everyone would be there waiting for this flood of patients, which has not occurred. The predictions that they made a month ago have not come true or even close, and the numbers keep being revised lower and lower and lower. And because of this, what California is doing, it proves that the healthcare system is not being overwhelmed. It correlates with everyone, you know, claiming that the hospitals are not overwhelmed, as the level one trauma center across the street from me is not. Now, at the same time, violent crime in New York City apparently is up 75%, as is alcohol sales, as is the domestic violence, which may be actually one and the same thing. Now, if this continues for any length of time, he may be correct. Dugin might be correct, because polls are showing Americans supporting these so-called crisis measures. But I don't think the Americans can grasp what's in store for them if this continues. And no one has really processed what Bill Gates is doing, where he is actually claiming to be in a position where he could actually make policy happen. And he's speaking almost as a dictator, which would make this an open oligarchy. And Twitter censoring what politicians are allowed to say to their people. This happened in Russia, in Syria, a few months ago. We did a Daily Nationalist on the question that big tech is deciding what governments can say and what they can't. That's pure oligarchy. But if this, you know, begins to stabilize, people are going to be outraged that what they've given up can't be given back. Now, Dugin wants to say that those who answer, who are forced to answer for what they've done, are going to pay by the destruction of their ideology is a separate issue. Some of you may have seen that the CDC has ordered the padding of the numbers of deaths. They say that if coronavirus can be assumed to have caused or contribute to death, it can be or should be listed as a primary cause. That's from the National Vital Statistics System. The underlying cause depends on what and where conditions are reported on the death certificate. However, the rules for coding and selection of the underlying cause of death are expected to result in COVID-19 being the underlying cause more often than not. So then they say that they should use the code for COVID-19, which is UO7.1, to be used no matter what the case is, regardless of what the tests say. No matter how much or how little of the virus is found in the system, if it's there, coronavirus is what caused the death. That means the death toll is lower than reported. If this is what, and I've seen the primary document, they're being told, hospitals are being told to pad the numbers. That being said, as of now, I'm not seeing this to be this massive collapse that Alexander Dugin seems to think. Now, as far as Dugin is concerned, it's just as possible that the closing of borders will be seen as a temporary expedient, not the future of mankind. I want Dugin to be right. He may be right in the long term, and that this is going to create a subconscious mentality that people aren't aware of. But a temporary response to crisis is hardly a revolution. What happened in Russia in the 1990s is incomparable. But it would have to happen something like that in order for Dugin's approach to be the case. And this is not going to benefit us, especially once the economy begins tanking even more than it is. So Dugin says, as soon as globalization collided with something that represents a real threat, all ideas about open borders, about technocracy, about Elon Musk, flights to Mars, driverless Tesla cars, Greta Thunberg, globalist projects and scams, all disappeared in a moment. Now, to that extent, he's absolutely right. All of this kind of thing is suddenly trivial compared to what it's like to stare death in the face, even if it's only theoretically. Suddenly, no one cares about this stuff. But at the same time, it's media manipulation at the moment, not reality. Now, the situation in China is problematic. As you know, a lot of the neocons and liberals are screaming for war. And once this is over, and the economy's in the tank, a war with China may be seen as the only way to rebuild the economy. Americans seem to think, and again, this is Johnson's law at work, that this is 1970 and Mao Zedong is still alive, and China is a tightly centralized totalitarian system. It is not. Its economic system redid its political system. China is over the worst of this, and they've lifted all the travel restrictions. Now, what Dugin is saying is that yes, they've gone over the worst of it because they're a relatively closed society, which is debatable, but they're certainly more closed ideologically than the U.S. is. Dugin says, due to the fact that China maintained a political structure governed by the Communist Party, because it was and remains disciplined, a disciplinary society that was instantly closed, instantly implemented isolation mode, closed Wuhan, other provinces, blocked people, forbade movement, imposed a state of emergency on a part of its territories, in such a way localized the virus and suppressed it. The strict coordinated action of the Chinese model gave an example of how to work with a virus like this. And of course, by extension, any real contagion, whether literal or not. But of course, Western media doesn't say this. They still claim that people are dying in massive numbers and that the party is covering it up. The regime is going to be blaming China, if this the numbers don't add up the way they want it to. There's an atrocious article out there in the Federalist called essentially it's blaming China. He's quoting classified intelligence. In other words, there's no way to check it. That says that China has far greater casualties than being reported. And by China, I think what they mean is simply in the Wuhan area. He even says that the press is covering for Beijing. Now, no one has seen this report. The article is entitled, "The Corporate Media's Coronavirus Propaganda for China is Finally Catching Up with Them," as if this isn't corporate media here. Well, China has corporate media too. But the press somehow is cooperating with the Chinese doesn't make any sense. No one has seen this intelligence report that he makes reference to. And since American intelligence has been caught lying about China over and over again, it should be probably discounted for now. The Tiananmen Square massacre is a myth. No one actually saw anything. But it was presented in the West like this mass slaughter, and that destroyed their credibility in this respect. The argument that this Bedford set seems to suggest is that because Mao Zedong slaughtered citizens in the 1960s, that means China's still doing it today, although there's no relationship between the two events. I mean, is he saying that China's destroying its own population on purpose? In a major academic center? It's the most ridiculous equivocation you can imagine. He gives no reason for the Chinese to want to do this. National Review is even worse. And they love this. The incinerators are working around the clock. Which, by the way, is impossible. I know a thing or two about a crematorium. They can't work around the clock. They can only work a few hours. They would overheat. They're massive pieces of equipment. And tremendous energy is needed. The claim that National Review cites very vaguely Radio Free Asia, which used to be a CIA but now is Soros-owned. Allegedly, China is giving huge amounts of money for funeral benefits, meaning that the number of dead is far higher than is being reported. But then they make the stupid claim that funeral homes have to report cremations to the local authorities twice a day. I have no idea where they get that from. They don't give a source for, they give a source for nothing here. What kind of a law is that? That's a dead giveaway. Did a funeral director tell them this? It's completely fictitious, especially since funeral homes don't own their own crematoria. And how could they know this? How could China have been so successful in covering this up, but we know that funeral homes have to report this twice a day? How would this even be public knowledge whatsoever? And why would the death rate be much higher there than elsewhere? And weren't they being condemned at first for a draconian response? Now they're being condemned for a non-response. The rumors that these guys are promoting, and it's all over the press, they have no sources. They're coming from neocon publications that have been talking about war with China for a long time. Now, the fact that a media may be privately owned does not mean there's any more truth there. The media does not have this role, especially in a private market. The Taiwanese have said nothing about this. Neither has South Korea. They'd be the first one to pick up on this if it's true. China can't hide statistics like this in a major city with a multinational population in a major academic center. All of a sudden, conspiracy theories are all the rage with these people now. And the issue comes down to the fact that once this is over, especially if the numbers aren't very high, and then they have to explain, you know, why 30-40% of the economy has disappeared, blaming China and going on the war footing with them may be a way to just, you know, to build support for the system, as well as provide a very easy target for blame. And Johnson's law is very important here. Given the low numbers elsewhere, there's no reason to believe that China would be any worse off than what's being reported. But who's doing the reporting? That's a multinational city. It's a university town. The WHO is there on the ground. It's completely illogical. It's puerile, over-emotional, and there's a reason for trying to make China out be the bad guy here. That's yellow journalism, no pun intended. The writers here, these guys are so stupid they don't realize that because the travel bans in China have been lifted, that means they're knowingly, wiping out their own populations? For what? this writer here, this foolish Christopher Bedford, says, well, Mao did it, so therefore they're doing it again. But he doesn't say why, or why they would use this very, very bizarre method to do it, and of course, harm their own economy at the same time. His argument is nonsensical. But this is a Federalist. This is connected to George Mason University. This is a major elite institution. But Johnson's Law predicts all of this. If the numbers were as high as they claim, the travel bans wouldn't be lifted in China. The truth is, the Chinese notified the World Health Organization on the 31st of December. And they said, we're struggling with a case of pneumonia of unknown etiology. They said this in Wuhan before the virus was even identified. China then immediately shared the genetic sequencing of the new coronavirus. Once it was discovered on January 7th, so international teams could work on immunization. And Donald Trump was notified right away that very same week. Now, January 23rd was less than 3 days after the first human-to-human transmission was known. 14 million people in Wuhan were quarantined. Just before the Chinese New Year, a mass stoppage of movement was put in place. By the way, that was the largest annual migration, is Chinese New Year there. Two days later, the limitation was over 50 million people. China couldn't keep a lid on Tiananmen Square, even though nothing actually happened there. The Soviets couldn't keep a lid on Chernobyl, even without the internet, with far more authoritarian systems, but somehow they're successful, the Chinese are successful in doing this. The World Health Organization is there, in Wuhan. Wuhan is an international city. There's many Americans and Englishmen there at the university and elsewhere, at the institutes, working and reporting on this stuff. Not to mention the fact that China has a centralized health database. You can't keep these numbers under wraps. And that database is available to everyone. And foreign doctors have been in Wuhan for a long time. And don't forget something else. The pandemic response team was removed from China in 2018, citing cost problems. Now the regime is saying they were thrown out by the Chinese recently. No, 2018 they were asked to leave, or they were pulled back by the Trump administration because of cost. The WHO is putting their stamp on this. And they have no interest in low numbers. The Chinese did do very well in this respect. They were condemned for draconian measures, and now you have these idiots of the Federalists saying they didn't do enough. And somehow this is now another Chinese great leap forward, where they're destroying their own economy and killing people for no good reason, and the American press is going along with them. That's what these people are saying. That's what this fool Bedford is saying. And Johnson's Law is important because people are assuming they don't know anything about, you know, how things work there. You know, the culture, the media, the system. They think Mao's still alive and Pol Pot's still running things in Cambodia, and that's how it is over there. And they're going to slaughter people for no good reason. And funeral homes have to give reports twice a day on the crematoria that they don't own. This is unbelievably laughable, stupid crap. They don't give any sources. Always the unpublished classified reports. They're saying that there were, you know, mass concentration camps in Western China, which is a lie. But they need to do this to justify these measures. And once it's over, they need someone to blame and rebuild the economy. China's going to be the target. This is a very serious matter. And don't let anyone tell you that the Chinese threw people out. They were pulled out. Anyway, besides the Chinese matter, the Dugin's argument is that because liberal societies can't really respond to this kind of thing, China's going to be seen as the model. Now, this is something that I've been saying for a while on other issues. When the drug issue exploded in America, you know, the 25th declaration of the drug war, which goes back to Nixon, if not before, was made in the early 90s. And it occurred to me even then that liberal democracy is not prepared for any real concerted action. Liberal democracy even in, at its best, only functions in a highly moral, stable agrarian society, not in a liberal one. Now, Iran is a democracy, just not a liberal democracy. But Iran is a very mentally healthy society, as the statistics all seem to show. But open societies have failed to deal with poverty. It's not just closed ones that have done okay. Dugin is jumping from temporary expedient to a complete remake of the broad masses of the society, partially based on what the success of China's had. The Chinese are not deliberately destroying their economy and slaughtering people for no good reason. They don't give a reason. Anyway, the point is that liberal democratic systems don't have institutions in place for extreme circumstances. What's happening now with the stay-at-home order has no legal foundation. I've been through all the laws and emergency powers. None of them give them this power, certainly not for numbers this low and not for some contagion. So many of the tests have to do with purported populations. Because a few people have been tested, they're going to extrapolate that for a whole area. It's kind of like a small sample size at a poll being used to extrapolate to an entire society. So many of the numbers are off, the death rates are off, and the number of infected are off. And we still don't know to what extent the disease is killing people or the disease is making things worse for those who are already ill. But Dugin's over-rosy estimation here goes back to the 1990s in Russia and is trying to make, you know, trying to put a happy face on a terrible situation. But the closest that he's getting here, and what I'll give him, is that a truncated economy may focus people on basic needs. But the short-term result's going to be poverty, not ideological revolution. I mean, inflation, if increased production is going to occur, can be brought under control because the trillions of dollars are going to lead to inflation. It won't be reported, but prices are going to go up. And there's no reason to believe that borders are going to remain closed. The minute international trade, and at least in most things, will be permitted again in certain places, it'll be reopened immediately, if not before. I firmly believe that in the next few weeks, you're going to have businesses opening up and just taking whatever they get. They'd rather go into court and make their case than go out of business. Because when you have small and medium-sized businessmen, you know, who are looking bankruptcy in the face, they're going to disobey the law. But Dugin is making the argument that the removal of these kind of libertarian civil liberties and the tight police state things is somehow benefits us. And the only way I could see him making sense here is that this kind of chaos is going to force people to reconsider what's important. We've been saying that for a very long time. Dugin says this is going to remain for a long time, therefore there are not temporary fixes. But that's debatable. Dugin says even the most optimistic forecasts announce a term of 6 months or even a year. But that's debatable. That's certainly not true as of yesterday. Now, he only wrote this a week ago at the most. And again, liberals are the ones who are making the more extreme claims. Now, he may be saying that the globalist structures are so fragile and the economy is so unhealthy that even a small shock to the system like this will knock it over. Well, that's exciting, and he may be right. But even if he's right in that respect, the short-term result is going to be mass poverty. But for him to say that, therefore, globalization has come to an end, not just as a matter of necessity, but as a matter of ideology, is a problem. He says, this multipolar world, in which China, Russia, strong closed states, even the U.S., can survive with states of emergency, with Trump, with the imposition of curfew times, patrol troops in the American cities, closing, suspension of democracy, temporary abrogation of civil rights and freedoms, and restrictions. This regime is henceforth dominant in the world, which will take shape faster and faster day by day. Now, who does that benefit? Liberals are the ones who are ordering this. And it's local governors who are doing this, not necessarily the president. Dugin himself says that liberalism is an authoritarian, if not a totalitarian system. So the police state happening here, this is at the behest of liberalism. State of emergency doesn't give the powers that local governors are claiming. As I said before, the failure of the drug war has nothing to do with the war itself, which has never been declared. As I've said many times, you don't give enemy soldiers a lawyer and a bunch of trials and juries and presumption of innocence. A war means their soldiers are killed. You imagine if in a war every soldier is given a lawyer. That's why the drug war is ridiculous. But liberal democracy can only function that way. What Dugin is saying here is that even if it's an overreaction, even if the numbers don't add up, the fact that this is being done is changing the nature of these systems forever. He thinks it's for the better. But what I'm not grasping here, the people who are running this are not on our side. So to make this jump is illegitimate. He says, in politics, the only recognized norm is parliamentary liberal democracy based on civil society being the subject and source of legitimacy. In ideology, everyone agrees with the arrangement of any individual, number of inalienable rights, etc., which all states have to guarantee. Now, how that's interpreted is a separate issue, because there's no corresponding duty. There is no society in liberalism. And he says these are the pillars that are coming under attack. Now, he could be thinking of Chernobyl and Afghanistan and the earthquake in Armenia, all of these things happening which harmed severely people's faith, not in the USSR as such. We've covered all of these things on this show. Afghanistan, certainly, the earthquake and Chernobyl, and even Tiananmen Square. Again, these governments couldn't cover this up, so I don't know how China was able to with the internet now. The issue is not so much that people turned on Soviet Marxism because they bungled the situation in Chernobyl or Armenia. The suggestion here is more esoteric. It's more Jungian here. He's saying that people will slowly begin to associate this kind of disaster with the present system, which I think is wildly, wildly speculative. Yes, he's right about the nature of the system. He's right about what liberalism is. He's right that it's inherently authoritarian. The difference between this and the drug war, of course, the U.S. simply can't handle crises very well. The drug war is making a lot of people a lot of money. This, as of now, is not making a lot of people a lot of money. The only people who are benefiting are those who are getting bailed out. That's the issue. I don't believe at all that the average person, even the average educated person, is going to, even in some back of his mind kind of a way, associate the free movement of goods with the virus. Now, in Russia, where Dugin is, it might be a different story. As far as Americans are concerned, now he's talking about everybody. He's talking especially about Westerners. He's not just talking about Russians here. Russians have already rejected liberalism. But what he means is that they're going to make this jump, and it's not going to happen when the U.S. begins blaming the Chinese. I mentioned the Chinese, the ridiculous stuff they're saying about China, as if they have the power to control that information, which they do not. He mentions this, people are mentioning this as a way to blame them in hopes for a future war. And even what Dugin says is very subtle in that he says that China is really a part of the globalized order. Ideologically, they're not in favor of it, But at the moment, they have no choice. This, at a minimum, will permit the Chinese to remake this order. It won't be a globalized order at all. It'll be theirs. Which, again, is becoming very subtle here. I don't think that the virus has this capability, especially given the revised numbers that we're looking at. He says, on the one hand, it could be said the coronavirus itself, the virus has a royal name for a reason, is demonstrating a status unique to that subject. We recall the ancient plague gods who were considered formidable deities in the beliefs of the peoples of the Middle East. Peoples of Mesopotamia had Era and Nergal. Others in the monotheistic traditions in Judaism, plagues were sent by a supreme deity Yahweh to punish the Jews for idolatry. In the Middle Ages, epidemics and plagues were considered a sign of divine punishment. Well, as the numbers stand now, this is not a plague. Traditional societies can give the status of this kind of, you know, large-scale, link these with divine, but moderns can't. Americans don't have the mental equipment to associate something like this with the rejection of the truth. They don't have that capacity. Individuals may, but certainly not as a society, and not when the media, recovers all of this and interprets all this. Now, if you've seen the comment sections on a lot of YouTube videos, regime YouTube video stuff, it can be very, very encouraging. More and more I'm noticing that these comment sections, which are being closed down all the time, loaded with pro-nationalist stuff. This is very true. That has a lot to do with the fact that the bailouts were, at least for a short time, front page news. I've written over and over again over the last 12 years that a second bailout can't happen because there's no money. There's no credit. The credit is way beyond repayability without cancellation. Well, the banks aren't going to cancel unless they're bailed out, which is, you know, just circular. That's why this is so important. It gives the excuse for further injections of funds. It's not at all assumed that police powers are challenging liberalism. In fact, they're enforcing it. There are all kinds of bills being shoved through Congress right now that are beyond, as I think I mentioned this 2 weeks ago, that are absolutely beyond anything that could have passed under normal circumstances. The Justice Department wants to be able to arrest people without trial. That's going a bit far, even for them. That's the mentality right now. Dugin seems to suggest that the centralization of political power and increase of police power somehow is anti-liberal. But he's the one who made the argument that, of course, liberalism requires that kind of violence. All liberal societies have to be imposed by the barrel of a gun. No liberal societies ever just develop. They're forced, including the American one. And the Civil War was absolutely necessary for that to happen. And the last point I want to make is a bit different. And he may be right about this, that because death is something that Americans are sheltered from. As you know, I grew up in my dad's funeral home. People are very, very weird around death, almost bizarre. They become very different. Their personalities are different. They make nervous jokes all the time. Half the time they're smiling. They don't know why. When I used to drive the limousine, families would ascribe all kinds of supernatural powers to the dead. If it was raining, they'd say, oh, he's up there making it rain. It's very bizarre that these people who are, in every other respect, secular, start talking like this when death stares them in the face. So whether or not these numbers ever really turn out to be very high, it doesn't matter. They're not being sheltered from death much anymore. I mean, they are. We're not seeing, you know, corpses or anything, but they're hearing about it every single day. Death is not something that you could push off to the side. It's now front and center. And look at what happened with 9/11. This was not exactly something that was on our side. The exact same things could have been said about 9/11 that are being said here. But the exact opposite occurred. You know, liberals and neocons were promoting the war and promoting the Patriot Act, everything that comes with it, as a direct result of 9/11. And he uses a Heideggerian, Heidegger's agenda. One of my favorite concepts of his, Das Man, which is the idea of inauthenticity, of lying to yourself, of conformism. Das Man is, in Dugin's view, is the mindless one, the act, you know, eating, sleeping, you know, procreating, just the most, you know, animalistic level, you know, major media kind of level, political, commercial, advertising kind of level. That's what Das Man is. He convinces himself that he isn't reasonable or not free and hides behind ideology or hides behind power or whatever it is. We can lie to ourselves about death when it's not staring us in the face. Now, 9/11 was just a one-time event. Dugin thinks here this is going to be a continuing explosion of mortality. But because more and more people are facing death, at least hypothetically, that's going to, in a subconscious level, completely change how they approach the world. He says a virus forces honesty, or anything like this, forces honesty. We can't afford not to notice death. Normally we could disperse it in our minds, but you can't do that anymore. If Dugin is right, and you have these large numbers, then the experience with death is going to be front center. It's not going to be something you could lie about. It's not something that you're going to be able to put off to the side. That's what he means, at least in part, when he says how this virus is going to change things. And because people are going to be concerning with themselves with death, with suffering, things like, you know, purgation and everything else, this may completely change and alter the religious landscape of things. That might be true. Death is something that they can't hide from. They can't lie about it anymore. Most people are not even aware on a day-to-day level that they're going to die. That's not something they think about hardly ever. Now they don't have an option here. The religious mindset develops when death is understood as a reality. And it's not so much whether or not there's going to be mountains of bodies. That's not the question. I don't think there is going to be. I think they're already, you know, that's not going to be the case. But even if Dugin is wrong, he is right in saying that death is now going to become a day-to-day topic of conversation. You can't run away from it anymore. And that's going to change people. That's going to have people approaching God and thinking about these things for the very first time. Unless you're facing that kind of thing and that kind of suffering in front of you, thinking about the faith usually is a waste of time. It's based on the fact that we're going to die. So I think Dugin is wrong with his extremely negative assessment of things. But even if he was right, it's far from certain that the measures that the regime is taking right now are going to lead to the results that he wants. It has to do with the press. It's going to have to do with China. It's going to have to do with how the U.S. eventually gets back on its feet. And warfare is usually how it's done. That's how the Great Depression was ended. And with the article that I just cited from you, for you, they're already building a case. But there's one thing that he's right on, that death makes everyone honest. When someone says something on their deathbed, you know that they're telling the truth. That's a totally existential approach to death that most of us have no connection to. The church wants us to be able to speak and act as if we're going to die in a few days. When people are up in an airplane and they're scared to fly, boy, they make all kinds of promises. They're wonderful to people. They're praying. They never prayed in their life, but they're scared to fly. They're looking at death. All of a sudden, they're completely different people with totally different agendas. The minute they're on the ground, they don't care anymore. So in that sense, Dugin might be right. And even if the numbers aren't what they're supposed to be, the broader point is more significant. It's something's going to be in the back of their minds. They can't deny it anymore. The nature of the state, the nature of open borders, the reality of death. These are things that may well be questioned in one form or another. It doesn't necessarily mean it's going to go our way, but we have to learn how to take advantage of this kind of thing. Anyway, thanks for listening, everyone. I appreciate it. I will talk to you next time. Bye-bye.